Refinance activity is heating up. Are your originators ready to capture the opportunity? Join Optimal Blue experts Jared Sammy and Brennan O'Connell on October 7th at 1 p.m. Central for a live webinar, Refi Revival: Stay Ahead of the Curve with Originator Intelligence. You'll discover how to surface high-potential refinance leads from your closed loan data, reconnect with past borrowers using timely, data-driven outreach, and cut research time from 30 minutes to just one click. Register now with the link in the show notes for this episode to give your team the edge in quarter four and beyond. In case you missed it, Optimal Blue has announced the dates for its 2026 summit. Join us February 23rd to 25th at Talking Stick Resort and Conference Center in Scottsdale, Arizona, for a client-exclusive event packed with strategic insight and innovation. Attendees will gain early access to Optimal Blue's latest generative AI and automation tools, dive into expert-led sessions on pricing, compliance, and more, and experience hands-on demos of new capabilities. Plus, it's a chance to connect with capital markets pros, integration partners, and mortgage insiders, all while gaining actionable strategies to maximize profitability and sharpen your competitive edge. The Optimal Blue Summit, where proven mortgage expertise meets modern innovation to shape what's next. Early bird registration is now open at summit.optimalblue.com. Space is limited, so register today. Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jeff McCarty, Vice President of Hedging and Trading Product at Optimal Blue. As you may notice, Jim Glennon's not here today, but joining me as always are James Cahill and Alex Hebner, our resident economic gurus from the desk. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode. All right, we got a great episode today. We're going to dig into the tariffs in detail a little bit. We'll talk about Donald Trump's social media post last Friday talking about the Great American Mortgage Corporation and what that might mean for us. We'll not a lot of details around that, but we'll speculate on what that might mean going forward. We'll talk about the data coming ahead this week, some inflation, some important inflation numbers, and think about where the Fed is at currently and start looking ahead to the September Fed announcement. So quick look at the data. Obviously, after the jobs numbers and the jobs revisions from Friday the 1st, so about 10 days ago, we saw Treasury's rally. So we saw rates drop some, although maybe not quite as much as anticipated. And we actually saw over the weekend into this morning a little bit of a backup in rates again. So we've got the OBMMI at 6.627. We were getting close to that 6.5 number, didn't quite get below 6.5. So jump back up a little bit, like we said, the 10 years at 4.27. So still, you know, even with these large employment revisions and, you know, looking more and more like a drop in rates from the Fed, still well within a range, you know, really haven't dropped too much. So we'll dig into that and more here in a minute with Alex and James. All right. Welcome, Alex and James, as always. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Alex, let's get right into it. Let's start with tariffs. What are the recent developments around tariffs?
Yeah, it feels like this has been kind of the event we've been waiting for now for tariffs to finally go into effect. You know, they've been here and there in effect, but this is kind of the big one when all those that were not able to negotiate a deal, tariffs went into effect for them. And then those that did negotiate a deal, they're now facing those tariff rates that they agreed to in said deals. That August 1st deadline followed by August 8th go live for those rates. I think the three of us, we were just kind of parsing through the data available to us so far. We were looking at some Goldman Sachs numbers this morning of who's paying what. It does appear that, you know, maybe not the American consumer so far is bearing the brunt of the costs, but definitely American entities, both the consumer and companies are bearing the brunt of the costs somewhere. What were we seeing? Somewhere in the range of like 64%, with 22% of that being on the consumer, the remainder with companies currently paying them. Which I think the three of us kind of all agreed that's likely to change. We're likely to see companies now that we know that tariffs are in effect, we know the rate, and we know that they're indefinitely in effect, we're likely to see companies probably begin to pass that cost on to consumers.
Yeah, James, you had a good take about kind of first movers there.
Yeah, I think I was saying a few months ago on one of the podcasts that if you're one of these large corporations and you can take the hit on the chin for a while, right? You don't want to be the person to move first, to raise your prices. You don't want to, you know, put a bad taste in the consumer's mouth or get flagged by everyone as the person raising prices. So as long as you have that wealth of imports or the ability to just kind of take some of this hit, you're going to do it for as long as you can. As Alex was saying with this Goldman Sachs data, like that very clearly seems to be what's happening. The importers are the ones who are paying the tax right now, but there's kind of a runway on that, right? They still need to make their margins. They still need to, you know, have profits every year. And the way to do that is to pass the price on to the consumer. So it's something that is kind of coming our way.
There's also just this dynamic, you know, we're seeing more and more of these one-off deals, whether it's particular companies or particular industries or portion of industries, lots of one-off deals. We saw the NVIDIA deal announced over the weekend. So it's a little bit just, well, it's tough to keep track of, obviously, but it's also, you know, it'd be tough to estimate what the effect to the end consumer will be because it can go almost product by product or, you know, portion of a product by portion of a product.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if the idea is eventually the price is going to get passed on or that the price is higher, if it's portion of the product by portion of the product or if it's the whole thing at once, the result will ultimately be the price inching up, right? You know, that's kind of the great fear with Ford was, hey, we're building, you know, part of the motor in Mexico. We're getting the tires from Canada. We're getting the leather from, you know, somewhere in China. So all of these pieces are getting tariffed individually, even if we assemble the whole thing in America, so it doesn't have any tariff on in America, all the pieces do. I think that with NVIDIA, that's kind of the shock that they're going to take is, hey, these chips are being used in everything. If the price on them or the components are going up, that's really going to eventually bleed into everything, software, technology, hardware.
Not to mention companies are already paying a steep premium for those products.
I would take it on the upside of this, you know, for the American budget is we have raised about $130 billion so far from these tariffs. Now, whether that's from effectively a quiet tax on the American people or not, it is always good to be trying to chew down that budget and potentially to have more money to work with, right? If right now we're in kind of a stagnant or slowing jobs environment, having more money to coming in and to work with could help empower the government to help produce jobs and keep the economy flowing. So that's kind of good. I think this is kind of an interesting take that I saw, but effectively, the administration has created another monetary policy tool here, right? You can control inflation with the interest rates. Slowly ticking them up over time is helping to kill inflation. Ticking it down over time would speed it up. Right now, we have an inflationary item in the tariffs. You could back these off. The administration could back these off and help lower the price of goods. So that is something that they have the ability to do. That actually puts a lot of power of monetary and fiscal policy in the hands of the administration.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. I saw something similar. It was talking about the difference between transitory and permanent tariff shocks. And if tariffs are transitory, there was a study that if they are transitory, then the tariff increases are neither inflationary nor contractionary. So if tariffs are transitory, they ultimately reduce imports and improve the trade balance, whereas permanent increases leave trade balances largely unchanged. So, you know, I guess that's something for us to hope for. You know, if these tariffs are temporary, you know, maybe it doesn't have ultimately no effects on inflation, and it does improve the trade balance overall. So there's something to hope for.
And we already have seen, you know, trade balance improvements down from in the hole, 70 billion on imports to about 60 billion. So it's already moving in the direction that they are hoping for.
But James, to your point, you know, we have already made so much money off of these tariffs. It's going to be difficult to convince the government that, you know, we want to get rid of that source of revenue, I think. So
Yeah, it's easy for the government to get a little addicted to where they're making their money, right?
Add that on top of the fact that they already philosophically were hoping to reshore American production. And that is not something that happens overnight or in any, by any economist definition of a transitory period. I think that falls in the 5 to 10 year, you know, time window. And by then, any inflation there would be heavily factored in.
Alex, we were talking about this before we started the podcast here, but just so right now at this kind of 15% base rate, 20 for some countries, there is a question mark around whether that number is high enough. And I'm sure everyone is scared by that sentence. Is the tariff number high enough? But to get companies to reshore right at 15 to 20%, is it worth them still kind of eating this, still passing this on to the consumer? Or should they, you know, spend the next 5 years trying to build a factory in the United States so that they can get the goods produced here?
Right. And I had done some reading that, in fact, that it likely isn't high enough. It's likely somewhere north of 30% is when that crossover point is. You know, it depends on the industry, depends on what you're making, but it's somewhere north of where these trade deals have been arrived at, of 15 to 20% to account for, you know, the steeper costs of US labor, cost of doing business in the United States, you know, environmental regulation, whatever it may be. Those costs all add up. And right now the crossover point is definitely higher than the negotiated rates that we've done with some of our major trading partners.
All right, so let's try to tie this back to rates ultimately. We've got some big numbers coming up this week that we may see the effects of tariffs tie into, right, Alex?
Yeah. No, it's inflation week, so we're getting CPI on Tuesday, PPI on Thursday. It's predicted to be a little bit higher again, 2.8% year over year. So moving in the wrong direction from where they want it to be. But we'll have to see where it lands. You know, I think there's maybe a little, what to call it, a fog on data now after the firing of the BLS head after the latest jobs numbers. You know, I really hope not, but I would hope no one's making the decision to fudge the numbers a little bit to keep themselves employed. But, you know, maybe we'll see a surprise to the downside. But right now it's expected to just be trending just a little bit higher, up to 2.8% there.
So you've got that on one side of the equation, right? Mm-hmm. Looking at where inflation growth is, you know, how much are tariffs going to affect just overall natural growth versus just increase in cost of goods? That has been our primary focus. Obviously, you know, just reiterating what happened about 10 days ago with the jobs numbers, we had the huge downward revisions from previous months. And now we're kind of, obviously, this renewed focus on the job portion of the equation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That segues really well into the next conversation I think we wanted to have, just in regards to the makeup of the FOMC board now. 2 weeks ago, I believe it was now, Kugler announced she'll be returning to academia, which left open a spot on the FOMC board, also a voting member for Trump to nominate. He took Stephen Miron, who is an Office of White House economic analyst.
Kind of one of the architects of the
policy, no, he's a big proponent. Mar-a-Lago Accords, follows Trump on you know the economic plan that Trump has. Big supporter of soft money. Yeah, I mean he's in favor of the tariffs. Goes without saying. But what he does is essentially gives Trump's core group of voters for lower rates, and the rest of the board does seem to be coming around to the idea that it's time to cut rates, at least on the short end of the curve. With the addition of Marin, it'll give three of the 12 voting members will heavily be in favor of rate cuts. So it's and not an insignificant voting block, so to say.
Yeah, that's what kind of I've been seeing too. We talked about, to use a 2025 buzzword, a vibe shift a little bit, right? Which does make sense. I mean, that employment data came out 2 days after the last Fed announcement. So now they've got this new data. They're going to react to it. Like you said, we know where 25% of the voters stand explicitly. It seems like, you know, potentially the rest, other parts of the board will come around to, potentially downward shift in rates. What are the CME rate futures saying?
They're showing a very strong chance for a cut in September, north of 90%, with a 50% chance by the October meeting of having seen 50 basis points in cuts. So looking like back-to-back cuts here.
Yeah. And even 44% for three cuts. So we've only got three meetings left this year and pretty close to even money right now that we'll see three cuts.
Yep, which would take us down to base rate 325 to 350, I believe, which dot plots, you know, longer term dot plots have shown that they show the long term Fed funds rate to be somewhere in the threes, somewhere in the mid threes. So that would probably be a lower bound, I would imagine, for the time being, barring any sort of, you know, black swan event, COVID-19 or war of some sort.
Good. Any other data coming out this week that we should keep an eye on?
Because some consumer sentiment and the University of Michigan survey, University of Michigan kind of being the man on the street take on inflation. You know, the CPI and PPI numbers, that's the hard numbers that businesses and consumers were seeing on the shelves. The University of Michigan is far more of a it's the sentiment of the average person. You can take it as even if, you know, inflationary data shows that inflation is tame, if people are under the impression that inflation is on the rise, that can lead to a whole other slew of economic behavior. So just keep an eye on that one. I'd more so keep an eye on CPI. That's what those voting members are going to be going off of. Other than that, it's a relatively light week on the data front.
All right. So let's pivot a little bit to one of the a fairly major development that happened Friday. Trump posted on Truth Social. He posted a picture of himself at the New York Stock Exchange with the Great American Mortgage Corporation logo listed, which as friends on the desk this morning but pointed out, the name's probably already taken by somebody.
I thought they already took it, but it might have been their Bitcoin thing or whatever. I don't know.
Right. But obviously a lot of implications of that post. It started to get passed around by various other politicians. Bill Pulte reposted it several times on Twitter, on X, excuse me. So left to lead a little bit between the tea leaves. But, you know, I think the main takeaway is that it's obvious that taking Fannie and Freddie public, again, is a focus of this administration. And it's something they would like to get done in some form this year. So, you know, I felt pretty strongly at the beginning of the year, this wasn't something that this administration was going to try to do this year. There are too many details to figure out and too many implications to figure that out. But as we've seen, they do like to move fast. You know, it does appear we're going to see something here. And in fact, there was a date on there that said November 2025 in that picture.
Yeah, it's interesting. The time frame has seemed to be immensely sped up. This first came, you know, quote unquote, on the menu back in the spring, and then it kind of fell away as people made the realization that it definitely wouldn't result in lower rates, and it'd be a divestiture, and we'd lose the implicit guarantee of the agencies if it were completely released. So throughout the middle of the summer, it was kind of off. You didn't really hear Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac in the news, and then last week, as you said, Jeff, you know, this posting, reading the tea leaves, what did they mean by this? And there's not a whole lot of concrete data on what exactly they're looking to do so far. And the information we do have seems to kind of contradict itself in certain ways. What we do know is they said they want to do an initial public offering, potentially with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac under the same stock ticker. Right now they currently trade because they're separate entities. They trade separately, you know, under Fannie Mae and FMCC, you know, respectively for their common shares. But yeah, they seem to want to group it under this MAGA stock ticker, do an initial public offering, but also They've said nothing about, you know, releasing them or the guarantee going away. It seems like they want to retain the best of both worlds. Maybe just claim a private market win. You know, American investors can buy shares of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. Maybe some form of dividend will, you know, tease some form of dividend that could be paid. But again, without fully releasing them, and they're still under government purview.
Yeah, I think through some of the interviews that Wall Street Journal and others had done after this post, the admins weighing an IPO of anywhere between 5% and 15% of Fannie and Freddie stock, as you said, combined with the goal of raising $30 billion, which would combine valuation of around $500 billion is what people are estimating. You know, who knows how close that number is. Obviously, both those stocks spiked on the news. Both of them are up around 20% or so over the past couple of days. So yeah, you know, a lot of details to figure out about how exactly it would happen. I think both of them staying under conservatorship is a good estimation. Again, not to rock the boat, you know, doing this type of limited offering of some of the stock, not fully taking them public. You know, it's obviously something we'll keep a close eye on. We are scant on details here. You know, we've talked a lot about what it means for those companies to exit conservatorship. in the past. We'll review that more in the future as we go. Any other thoughts on this right now?
Not really. I'm really just waiting on additional details of what exactly they mean. They should be forthcoming soon. I mean, it's already mid-August, and if they're targeting something in November, we'll have to see. But they'll have to release something if they're actually planning to do something here shortly.
Yeah, I think there's so many details to figure out. This is the MO of the administration, right? It is to move fast with some big pronouncements and figure out the details as you go a little bit. And it certainly gets things moving. We can say that.
Absolutely does. But I'd also keep in mind, just keep tariffs in mind. We saw, an April 15th initial date on those tariffs. They didn't go into effect till August. So if we're targeting some form of announcement by November, maybe a Q1 or Q2 of 2026 might be the official date if they go through with all this.
Yeah, I like that. We certainly didn't see any sort of meaningful change in mortgage spreads or rates. We have seen, mortgage spreads tighten a little bit recently, but we will absolutely keep an eye on that. My long-term view is if you remove any sort of, explicit or implicit guarantee, you're going to see a relative increase in mortgage rates. Investors are going to require a higher return. So you could see higher guarantee fees and things like that, which will ultimately, increase rates for the borrower. So that, as we've talked about, that's something, certainly the administration would not want to see, or at least explicitly see, where it's incredibly obvious to the end borrower.
They'll need to provide assurance, is what I'll say, that rates won't increase.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, keep an eye out for those CPI numbers this week. That'll be the big mover. Obviously, any other announcements around this offering of stock of Fannie and Freddie, we will keep a close eye on, and we will keep you up to date next week on any changes over the coming week. Thank you, Alex and James.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
That's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market updates and analysis to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thank you for tuning in to Optimal Insights.
Is your technology vendor selling real solutions or just the idea of them? Too often, companies pitch big returns, offer free trials, and promise seamless automation, only to reveal during implementation that the tech doesn't actually exist. At Optimal Blue, we take a different approach. Our AI-powered automation is already live, already delivering, and already saving lenders real dollars. We show you exactly where the ROI comes from and how it reduces risk. No vague timelines, just proven technology that's working in production today. AI at Optimal Blue isn't just about delivering software. It's about empowering lenders to make smarter decisions, operate more efficiently, and stay ahead of the curve. Built around real capital markets challenges, informed by direct engagement with thousands of clients, and focused on delivering measurable value at no additional cost to clients. While others talk about AI, we're delivering it. Innovation that delivers for your bottom line. Learn more at optimalblue.com.